He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Also, like, importantly here, because you're selling D'Lo on this, right? Like, I spent a lot of time talking to assistant coaches and stuff around the league, and I kept on asking, like, how would you sell this? How would you go about, like, having this conversation with somebody who was a lifetime starter? Like, not just the NBA, but the entirety of his life, he's been a starter. He's been the best basketball player.
Generally, guys who are lifetime NBA starters were starting before then, too.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying, like these are habits that have been formed since, like, the first dribble that this dude took, right? So, I was asking around, like, how would you sell this? And they would say, like, I would go to D'Lo, and I would say what this can do for his game and for his market, because...
Yes.
And this is something that I just talked about on the article that I wrote today for Clutch Points, right? Is the last two transaction windows or free agency opportunities for D'Lo. He took what he considered a pay cut 2 years ago on that 1+1 deal. And then on the back end of literally setting a record for the best shooting season that any Laker has ever had, he wound up having to opt into that player option, something that normally doesn't happen unless like an out and out disaster takes place. You get hurt you're terrible. It's a terrible fit. All those things. No, he played well in the regular season, played poorly in the postseason. And then he winds up having to opt into his deal. And, you know, when I was asking, you know, executives and stuff like, well, what do you think this means for his market after this year? And they're like, he might get the mid-level, or he'll get like a chunk of the mid-level to be higher paid than or better paid than a vet min. But there was a lot of concern about what this guy's market was going to look like. And, you know, in the last five after, like, as the
I
Lakers
still
have
think
been
he'd
on
at least get the mini mid-level, like maybe not the full, but like he'd at least get the mini mid-level.
Yeah, I think so, too. But in asking around since the Lakers have been on this run, though, and saying what people think, like they're saying, yeah, he's a lot more intriguing a player if he's willing to accept this kind of role or be open to any role that helps the Lakers win. And the thing to keep in mind here with D'Lo, too, is we know what, like, he does not have a poker face.
Yeah,
right. We know what it looks like when D'Lo is checked out. We know what it looks like if he isn't giving it his all, and the numbers, the impact numbers that we're talking about here, would indicate that he's giving his all, right? And so, like, he's actually, I think, bought into this, which I think is extraordinary on his part, and I think it's going to be really good for him in the market this summer.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the point that I want to add is that I don't think that this is all a JJ, you know, is so good at selling this stuff thing, although I do think that probably has a lot to do with it. Russell seems to have a better relationship with JJ than he did with Darvin Ham, which low bar, but, you know, he clearly seemed to hold, like, the Dennis Schroeder stuff against Darvin to, like, a kind of weird degree, to be honest, you know, to still be bringing it up, like, the next season, and it was just clear, like, those two guys just, like, did not vibe or, you know, with each other, and so JJ, but, you know, clearly communicated this better than, you know, Darvin did at that point. But I also think that part of this is, you know, JJ has the advantage of the circumstances that you're talking about, where not only has the market for two straight years told you what it thinks of you and that you're not going to get as much money out there as you have been, as you had available from the Lakers in both cases, but, you know, two, there's not a lot of teams with cap space this summer. And so I was talking to somebody, just a friend of mine over the weekend, about, like, why they noticed the same thing you did, is like, why does D'Lo seem to be taking this so much better this year? And it's like, well, I think the answer is because his agent has probably gone to him and explained the situation and said, look, the market is not there for you as a starter right now. Like, that's just, I'm sorry, it's not happening. And so, you know, if you have to come off the bench and you can show that you can be part of a winner as a reserve role, that is now the way that we get you the most possible money, because it's not going to come as a starter. And there's not that many teams with cap space this summer. And the other thing is, too, the Lakers have his bird rights. And so if you want want more money than the mid-level, then like your best odds of getting that are from buying into a Lakers role and having them quote unquote overpay to keep you and, you know, keep you under contract there. So I do think that it's a situation where like this is his hand has been forced to a degree. And now like we've seen all kinds of guys not recognize that reality and still not buy into roles. So this is not to not give D'Lo any credit. Like he deserves credit for still, you know, sort of pushing down his ego and being willing to accept this change. But I do think that there's like sort of a variety of like context factors that have made this easier.
Yeah, 100%. But I think we do need to hammer home like how I think it's cool. Like, I think it's really cool that D'Lo has accepted this and is thriving in the way that he has. Because again,
it's a lower tier version of like, you know, like the old cliche about like the hero's journey that like every star had until like, you know, like the mid 2000s, where it was like every star doesn't know how to win until they like learn to sacrifice for their teammates or, you know, like whatever the MJ, everybody had the MJ narrative put on them. And it's like, oh, you know, they just had the star. They just have to learn the triangle and then they're good to go. And this is like a lower end version of that. Of D'Lo is realizing like he can be, you know, like a strong starting caliber player, but he's not going to be a guy that wins at that level necessarily in the playoffs. And so can he become a super overqualified bench guy that is just like dynamite against other team six man reserves and stuff and really win his team a bunch of games that way?
Yeah. The impact numbers are staggering. This season, the Lakers are 8.2 points better per 100 possessions when D'Lo is on the court. And they're 12.1 points per 100 worse when he's on the bench. That's on the season as a whole. And then in this five-game winning streak, they are 19.9 points better per 100 possessions when he's been on the court. And then 5.4 points per 100 worse when he's off of the court. Like,
yeah, I wasn't going to call out the typo live on air, but
it's, I know. I saw it as I was reading it.
That's why I always used to tell you, read your stuff out loud and you'll have less typos.
But so, yeah, like the you don't have those kinds of plus minus numbers, even in a small sample, Harrison.
Yeah.
You like,
and even that, like, going against reserves.
But that's the thing. Here's why this. I think it's worthwhile to explain why this is the perfect role for D'Angelo Russell. One, he is still an elite, I think, offensive point guard.
Yeah,
like he has a great handle on the ball. He understands the rhythm of the sport. He understands like who needs a touch when, how to get to what spot you need to get to in order to get the offense running. All of that stuff. He's very, very good at that. So he's good at that against starters. Against bench units, he's godlike, you know, like, and so you have
that
factor. And they
can't take advantage of him on the other end as well much either.
That's the second part of this, right? Is it like on
like they have their Gabe Vincent out there trying to attack D'Angelo Russell. And it's like, okay, I mean, good luck. You know, you're probably going to get by him, but like, you're probably not good enough to capitalize on that enough consistently to make him like hemorrhage points.
Well, and then you look at the types of players that he's playing with out there in that second unit. It's like the Max Christie's of the world. He plays some with like Cam Reddish out there. He'll play, you know, with Christian Coloco and guys like that. Dalton, his offensive rating so far this season with Dalton Connect, and they've played 100 plus minutes together. It's like 132.3. Points per 100 positions that they're scoring together. But like, you know, yeah, you can't take advantage of him defensively the way that starting units do. And he is taking full advantage of bench defenses. And then on top of it, and I think this is the biggest factor here, why he has these crazy plus minuses, or one of the biggest factors, is if he doesn't have it, JJ has just been pulling him, right? He's had games where he's only played 20 minutes. And you know, if you get yanked on nights that you don't have it, that's going to help your plus minus, because you're not going to stay in there to hurt your plus minus.
That's a good point.
So like they've basically found this.
So is JJ using his podcast media brain to get D'Angelo Russell the Sixth Man of the Year award? He's like, look, D'Lo, he's like, I know how these people think. Like, yeah. I can manipulate their stupid little VORP numbers that they is all they look at because they aren't going to watch you play. And yeah. if I can just get your net rating up to a certain point, you're going to win Sixth Man of the Year. I'm going to prove it to you.
Yeah. Well, I think he has a real shot at Sixth Man. If he stays in this thing.
I do too. He's scoring. He's coming off the bench. You know, it's a good story that writers can get behind, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that's going to work against him is he's like, you know, he's not the greatest with media. So it's like, I don't know that like everybody's going to be like bending over backwards to like vote for him, which I'm not saying that's like right. I'm just saying that is that's often how these awards votes go. And yeah. so like that's sort of a mitigating factor, but I do think that he has a chance to make a case ironclad enough that he's just going to get it regardless of if he's like sort of terse sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and look, like I've made this point a few times too. I'm fine with him being terse about this. I'm fine yeah. with him being a little frustrated over this. It shows that like he has, there's an amount of pride right. still left that like he wants to be a starter. He wants to have a bigger role in this team's success. And like, I do think there is so much value in having a 16, whatever million dollar player slotted at the exact perfect role.
Yeah.
It is so effing valuable to have a high salary player willing to accept a lesser role, thrive in that role
yeah.
and then have that spurn success in the way that it has spurted the Lakers success so far. And that 5-0, like that's why I asked AD what I did. Right. And he kind of, you know, he touched on it at the very beginning where he said like it rewards that good process and it gives you more confidence to stick with that process. This is honestly best case scenario, how this has played out so far. We did get a question here that I'm gonna do the trick that some of these TV shows do where they're like, oh, and we'll go to the crowd for a live question that we definitely weren't going to address the subject matter anyway.
Yeah.
But this question that we have here,
Anthony, why are you so handsome? Okay, you put that in. That's not real.
What are you talking about at Anthony Irwin's burner? Like why would I make it that obvious? Alex Chavez writes, Anthony, do you still think they can afford to trade D'Lo with how important he's been as the sixth man in running that second unit? And that's where this gets interesting, right? Like, what do you think about that one?
I do, but it raises the bar for what you have to be getting back. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I expect, oh, like, you know, teams are going to be fighting over D'Angelo Russell now in a trade, or like, I don't think that this changes how, you know, Chicago views him or something like that, or like one of these like prospective trade suitor teams that they're going to be linked to a million times over the next couple months. But I do think that it changes the calculus for the Lakers on like, okay, we have to attach a pick to this guy, like, you know, as the main sort of crux of salary ballast. You know, the team's not taking him in because they value D'Lo. They're taking him on for the pick and that's to get an upgrade. And so, you know, but you need more of an upgrade than maybe you were getting before, where it's just like say he had taken this move really terribly, then it's like, okay, he's probably leaving at the end of the year anyway. This is basically like a human trade exception. He's not doing much for us. You know, mm-hmm. He's not really helping the team. Like, we just need someone who can contribute at some level that's higher than D'Lo, which is not very high. But given that he's contributing at a high level, I think that changes it, where, you know, you really need to be addressing sort of one of your major weaknesses. Like, you know, I would say probably the wing is like the biggest area of wing defense is probably the biggest area where the Lakers need to address some things. And so I think that you have to be sort of substantially addressing a real flaw in your roster to move off of him, and not just because you're like, oh, you know, we're gonna like trade him for like Dorian Finney-Smith, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it basically means that Gabe has to be, like, if you're going to trade D'Lo and not get back somebody who can run that second unit, it basically means Gabe has to be good enough to do that. And all right, maybe
that's the end of this episode.
yeah, right. Well, I think it means that the Lakers are going to try harder to include Gabe in those trades than before, you know, where
and you would think it wouldn't be that much harder other than from like the just D'Lo makes more money, so it makes it easier for him to be like sort of the main crux of like a, you know, uneven deal. But Gabe, like, it's again, it's not like either any of these teams are taking these guys because the rebuilding teams that are about to tank, they're not taking these guys because they want them. They're taking them because they're getting picks attached. So you wouldn't think like how Gabe is playing is like probably fairly immaterial.
And honestly, like, Gabe, I think, probably has a little bit better reputation around the league than D'Lo does.
I guess the downside is he does have another year left on
his deal. Yeah, he has the extra year on his contract. So,
you know, maybe that does change the calculus.
But, like, I'm looking at, you know, D'Lo's trade market and what the Lakers would be looking to accomplish in trading him. And before, it was like they would be looking to accomplish contract matching. But now, like, that and I don't think these impact numbers are going anywhere anytime soon. Like, he's too talented a player, and he's playing in too perfect a role, I think, now for us to, like, a couple months from now look at what he's done on a larger sample size and be like, oof, man, what a terrible take that was when I said this is the perfect role for him. So if we look at, you know, when we get to January, when we get to February, And you're starting to have those conversations in a more real way, like, the Lakers are really going to have to take. I was always skeptical. Like, the consensus take that I probably disagreed with the most was where the people saying like the Lakers couldn't trade D'Angelo Russell because they really needed D'Angelo Russell's production when he was a starter. They were saying that, and I was like, I don't know. I feel like you could probably do okay finding a starter who could provide those kinds of numbers or have somebody step into a role, and maybe it's a slight step back, but the aggregate improvement is such by bringing in that wing or getting a better backup center, whatever it is, that you can make up for D'Lo not being in the starting unit anymore. Now in this role, I do, like, this is the first time that I'm questioning, man, should they mess with this? You know, and maybe he gets sick of this. Maybe that honeymoon period, you know, wears off and, you know, you get to the trade deadline and it's like, okay, that was a cool story for a little bit. D'Lo isn't happy doing that still. We got to move on. And maybe at that point, you know, Gabe is further away from the 14-month absence that he's had roughly, that, you know, he's better equipped to handle that role than he was at the beginning of the season. But I do think that now with the way that he's playing, you have to factor it in.
Has started to like kind of ball out and he's ready to sort of take on that role from Gabe.
Who's that?
Jalen Hood-Schifino.
Who they have I'm trying to think, who is that guy?
He mostly plays for the South Bay Lakers.
Oh yeah. Oh no, wait. I'm thinking of Quincy Oliveri. The sad part is like that's
Raj is like probably listening to this at work, just like balled up fists at his desk. Like, why? Right, it wasn't even a topic of conversation.
So funny story about that. The way that StreamYard like kind of take people behind the curtain, when I send out the link to guests to come onto the show, they now have access to the green room here on StreamYard from then on. Like, they are always like, they could, if they click on that link,
Anthony, I feel like there's no way that is the default setting, that you can't change that setting.
It was something I selected. It was something that I chose on purpose because it better helps you like organize your shows, and like you can find your shows a little bit easier when you want to download clips and stuff like that. So there's like a benefit to it, but like the downside is that now that like all of those guests could like at any point just trample into the studio.
Surprise cameos.
Could you just imagine if Raj like remember that? Because he's the only guest who knows that. So could you imagine if Raj just tramples on here? He's Jalen Hood-Schifino.
He had a really strong second half of his G League season last year.
Oh, man. for those curious too, like as far as does it do anything to D'Lo's trade market? I'm told not really. You know,
if anything, you would think it would sort of improve it, but probably doesn't.
But like, it's such a small sample at this point that I don't think it's right now. It's going to do anything to it. And then, as far as like, you know, his free agency market, I think it slightly improves it. I was talking with somebody though who made a good point in saying that, you know, when you're a starter, your baseline is a lot higher than when you're a bench player. So like for every amount of money that D'Lo maybe now has access to, you have to grade that relative to a bench player. Whereas before there was like a certain, you know, you're probably guaranteed at least 12 million or so as a starter.
Well, but that's the thing is the market was sort of going to tell him that he probably wasn't a starter with whatever team he signed with this offseason anyway, because it's
and
like,
now he gets a head start.
Are the Nets like who are tanking? Like, are they going to give him a big bag to bring him home and like have him start? And, you know, they're like, oh, this is a fun story for our fans. Like maybe, but if they aren't, then there's not a lot of other options, you know? And so there's sort of a lot of guys are sort of gambling on like, do I think I'm going to be the one that the Nets are going to pay? Because if not, I mean, there's not a lot of cap space out there this summer.
Yeah. Does Detroit have cap space? Maybe San Antonio does. And Brooklyn, I think that's about it.
Both of them have used up quite a bit of it because they're like taking on bad money for picks.
Yeah. He gets this head start on that role. And if he accepts it and thrives in it as he has, then, you know, I do think that improves his trade market. And that's not just me, right? Like that was something that I wrote in that piece was that like, you know, other teams are a lot more interested in D'Angelo Russell now that he's willing to accept this than they were, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So we'll see what that looks like. But I do want to like kind of finish on how cool it is to watch D'Lo, who has this immature label out there, has earned it to a certain extent too, don't get me wrong. But like he has that label on him. There's that narrative about him. And like, I've always been hesitant to take that extra step and be like, he doesn't care about the team, or he's like, you know, too selfish to care about the team. I just think he's a little eccentric. He's a very smart guy, I think.
And
he's
just athletically limited in meaningful ways. You know, it's like, it's not selfish to be a bad defender if you're like, you're just not built to be a good defender, you know?
Yeah.
It's like he tries, like he's been trying this year. There's just certain things like he's just not going to be very good at.
Yeah. And it's interesting. He's listed at 6'3". I always thought he was taller than that. You know, and then
he used to be listed 6'4". I don't know if they're like moving him down to like try and
he's so old that he's shrinking.
They're like,
so
no, how is he supposed to stay in front of this guy? He's only 6'1".
They're tempering expectations. It's like, wait, he swore he was like
7 inches taller than Gabe Vincent. It looks like, how are these guys listed the same height?
If you were to try to categorize like how real the Lakers are, we've seen them a 3-game win streak. We've seen a 5-game win streak. We've seen a 1-3 or 1-4 road trip. We've seen the two ends of the spectrum here so far with the Lakers. Where do you think they finally sit?
I think the real version of the Lakers is the one that wins every single game, and the one that struggled, that's the fake version where they just were doing the wrong things. I think at this point they've shown us that they should be, you know, at minimum in contention for like the sixth seed, you know, and like avoiding, like, I think the goal should be avoiding the play-in this year. And if you can sneak in and you can sneak up the West and you can get home court advantage, that's great. But I think, and you know, again, all of this is like injury dependent and stuff. Like if either of the stars get hurt, they're going to be fighting for their lives. And like these goals sort of go out the window, but if provided those two guys stay relatively healthy, I think it's totally reasonable to just say like, hey, you guys should be out of the play-in this year, given sort of the track record of like over those years of when they play that core group. Like they've shown us that they are at least that level of a regular season team that should be able to compete for a fifth or sixth seed, if not like a fourth seed, if a lot of things break right.
Yeah, I probably have been in that same kind of range there too.
Like, well, they're not gonna get the best record overall. Like, I just don't. I think the West is too talented.
I think you'd be dumb to try, yeah, frankly, because you know that means you're playing LeBron.
You're gonna have your night. You want to be able to have your nights where LeBron sits out, because even though he said he wants to play all 82, like, you know, color me skeptical. Like, I think there will be some games where it's like they're just like, hey, it's not worth you playing tonight. Like, let's just shut it down. You know, even if he stays relatively healthy at going at like at age 40 next month, and you know, if Anthony Davis gets hurt or if there's, you know, some nicks and knacks, like he's already sat out one game because he had a plantar fasciitis thing, and you know, now and then he came right back. You know, he may be in and out of the lineup sometimes with that, even best case scenario. And so, you know, like I just don't think that they're going to be able to go full bore for like the number one seed, but I do think that, like, you know, trying to compete and like stay within range of that fourth seed at the very least, where if a couple things break right the last couple weeks of the season, maybe you can sneak your way in there. Like, I think that's about where they should be setting the pace car for themselves.
I think an even more important version of that same
question. And bottom is like, definitely avoid the play-in. Like, there's no reason you guys should be in the play-in again. Like, yeah, just don't be embarrassing for a month and a half at mid-season like last year, and you will avoid the play-in. Okay, it's not that hard. I mean, maybe it is hard, but the West is deep, but they should be able to do that.
But I think a more important version of that same question is like, do you think the Lakers, or this version of the Lakers, will be good enough to, you know, stay in the hunt consistently enough to convince Rob Pelinka to do stuff at the deadline? And
I think the version of the Lakers that gets, I hate to be this much of a cynic after we've had like such a positive show, but my mindset is always like, if I'm trying to put myself in Rob Pelinka's brain, it's like, where do I have the most job security? And like, you know, it's like, if team is like a 5 or a 6 seed and I trade a pick that's in like 2029, 2030, 2031, whatever, you know, that's the kind of thing that could get me in trouble down the line if this team is like loses in the first round or loses in the second round. Yeah. But it's like, if the team is good enough to be like at the top of the West, and it's like, people are going to blame me for not making a move if, like, you know, if they don't go as far as their record says that they should go, then that's when I think you start to see him push in the chips a little bit. And so, you know, I think they have to play well enough that, like, going into the deadline, like, they're going to sort of force Rob's hand, where it's like, hey, this very clearly flawed roster is like the fourth seed in the West. So do you want to be serious, or like, is a home gate playoff revenue for one round like good enough for you?
Do you think they can do that, though?
I think they can. I don't know that they will, but I think they can. I think they're capable of it.
Yeah, I think so too. I like, they're 9-4 right now.
But like, they're going to need health for sure. And
Vando hasn't played
for all of this. Yeah.
You know,
Vando hasn't. I think they can. I think they're capable of it.
Max has played like 2 good games, you know.
Well, Gabe has played 1 again. JJ sent him to the bench and Max leaned forward in the chair. He's like, all right. He's like, my biggest hater's back. I gotta show you.
Chair?
Yeah.
I think they'll be good enough to force Rob's hand. The other thing too, and I like, this needs to be brought up a lot more than I think it's been brought up so far this season. Rob's contract, unless they've given him a secret extension,
I absolutely believe it. I just assume they have already. Like, I just, you know, like,
unless they've given Rob this a secret extension, Rob's contract runs out at the end of next season, not this season, but the next one, which means if he doesn't, you know, play the right tunes or make the right moves, so, you know, throughout this year, he could arrive at going into next season as a lame duck candidate. And I don't think Genie would want to put him in that position. Like, you would, no, you talk about convincing, she would have to be really convinced to do that.
Yeah.
But I do think though that, like, if the Lakers are, like you're talking about, a 4 or a 5 seed, and, or especially a 4 seed where they have home court, and they arrive at the trade deadline and it comes and it goes, and the Lakers don't do anything to address any parts of this very clearly flawed roster, or like they don't even do enough to like open up a roster spot so that Quincy Olivari can like finish out this season with the main roster. Like that's well, they don't
have to do that till like the final day of the season. So theoretically, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think they have to do it by March. I think he has to be on an NBA contract just like everybody else, you know, in March to be on the playoff roster.
No, you just there's some date about you have to be cut by then, but he's eligible. He would be eligible to join a play. Like there's remember when the Lakers signed Tristan Thompson on the last day of the season?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Tax penalties. It's like as long as you're a free agent by that point, you're allowed to like so the Lakers he's not a free agent obviously he's on air yeah. He's a two-way contract with them but they could just promote him to the I think the regular roster at any time
yeah
because all that is like that's like, that basically like a contract extension upgrade is my understanding that's not like we're tearing up your two-way contract and giving you this other contract
yeah all right well I believe that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Jeffrey Santos did ask about that. What I do think is that like at the deadline, they'll make an imbalanced trade that opens up a spot for Olivari.
Or maybe they won't. I mean, look, we've seen a lot of guys light it up in the G League at times. And like, you know, they don't always call them up. You know, they don't always think that it's translatable to what they're going to do. You know, the reality is, I know nobody wants to hear this. And like, I hope that Quincy's great. I want him to be good. But there are guys who it's like, you know, they average 30 points a game or whatever in the G League. But then it's like you get into an NBA rotation and it's like, okay, well, you're not going to be like the star of the show here. So what do you do? And they just may not have a vision for that right now on what that is that he provides them with, you know, it at the scale his role would be with the parent team.
Well, he can shoot, which I think
cut Bronny.
I don't think that's going to happen.
LeBron revenge against his own team, run to the finals.
No, the rumor that I'm really looking forward to is like Team X is demanding Bronny in a trade.
And look, I mean, you know, to some degree, it's like, hey, they could cut JHS. Like, it's not like they're going to keep him anyway. Like, in his contract,
cutting players doesn't do anything for you because they're up against the second
roster spot.
It does, but you can't really because the Lakers are like, you know, Genie has made it very, very clear.
Yeah.
That you are to stay under the second apron, period.
I do wonder if they did it on the last day of the season or something like that, if they have enough. But I'm not a cat. This is bad radio now because I don't
know. Well, no, but like if you, but even if you do that, like if you go above the second apron on the last day of the season, that now counts because it's how you finish the season. So that,
oh, you're right.
That will then mean that you have been, and that starts the counter on how many years you're above the second apron and all that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I got a question up here earlier, right in the comment section, like why can't they just cut so and so for Olivari? And it's like because it just doesn't quite work that way. They literally need to do work to open up a roster spot, and we'll see if they're able to do that. So, Harrison, this has been a lot of fun. Is there any? I never ask you this. Is there anything you want to plug?
You know, just check out sbnation.com. That's the main thing. You know, we have Noah Dalzell has been breaking news around our new WNBA writer, full-time professional women's basketball writer, has been breaking news around she broke when the Celtics were going to the White House this weekend. She broke, did not break when the Lakers were visiting for the in-season tournament title, but I suppose that's like a future scoop. And she also broke that Teresa Weatherspoon is going to be returning to coaching with Unrivaled and, you know, some other stuff. So, you know, if you're interested in Unrivaled, which is going to be the WNBA offseason league, like check out sbnation.com/WNBA. And we're going to have like plenty of coverage on that throughout the offseason. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously, you know, you guys all know Silver Screen and Roll, your favorite, you know, like check out Team Site Network, sbnation.com, all of it.
All right. That is going to do it though. See, we have a game tomorrow, which means Raj and I will be on right after that. And then I still have so many of those questions left over from Sunday. So I'll go ahead and handle, unless there's news to talk about, I'll handle the mailbag. We'll do a second mailbag episode on Wednesday. And then Thursday they play again, and that'll take us through the remainder of the week. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Harrison Fagan. This has been the Lakers Lounge. Please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please tell your friends that you love the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. and we will talk to you guys now. Here's Avery.